Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran trial lawyer Manny Barling. Manny, welcome.
Welcome, and welcome to all our listeners on a beautiful Sunday afternoon in America.
It has been a busy week, and we have much to talk about.
Well, we sure do.
And I happen to know that we have a veritable cornucopia of guests joining us. The creme de la creme of the modern intelligentsia. Who do we have?
Well, today, first of all, we're going to go to round three of our ongoing debate over the state of America as the election approaches. And to discuss this topic, we're going to go through a variety of different people. We have, on today's shows, we have conservatives, we have liberals, we have fence sitters, and we have Simon, who wears the striped shirt and bow tie of a beleaguered referee, because he's got to keep refereeing these guests, because someone's going to be sticking pins in voodoo dolls. So what we're going to do, for those who have listened before, everyone on this panel has mixed views. Some of us don't even know who we're going to vote for. We can all change our political opinions as needed to taunt each other, and frequently we do, especially John, because John's the expert on switching positions. So on the right side of your computer dial, let me introduce John Perry, whose views are like a benevolent Attila the Hun on Catholic school steroids. John comes to us with a degree in economics from McKenna, but his friends wonder if he ever learned anything about politics there. John, welcome to the show, and do you have your shin guards on today?
Thanks for that intro, Henny Youngman.
See, I was trying to be Don Rickles. You got me. So John's ready to jump on everything we say, but a little closer to the top, representing middle America and small business owners across the Midwest, we have Sam Maffey, noted novelist whose last book, To Kill the Duke, is worth reading for mystery lovers and our audience. From Poland, Ohio, the man with Sarah Palin's view of Russia from his French porch, Sam Maffey. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Well, thanks for that introduction. Did you when Johnny Carson was looking for somebody to introduce him?
only when I saw him in restaurants. Okay. But, you know, we're not alone. We have to have one guy here who's normal. So in the middle, ready to straighten us all out, is the ever-resourceful attorney and commentator Peter T. Haven, one of Los Angeles' finest lawyers and a source of stability in our debates between other panels and panel members. Peter, I sure hope you can keep us on the straight and narrow, because you got your job cut out for you today. Welcome, Peter.
Oh, thank you. I hope I can, too, after that intro. Thank you very much.
Well, it's all true. I could have gone on longer.
Peter, I think you're nuts for wanting to talk to us.
Yes, and we're not going to do a Jose Baez and embarrass any lawyers here today. But, you know, we've had a serious week up and down. This is a week where the incident in Colorado has tested the mettle of American conscience. So much has been said. So many shows have been done. I don't want to go through and rehash the entire incident and revisit all the different facts. So because so much has been said, we're just not going to rehash the facts. We're going to go around the table once and ask each panelist if they have any observations they believe the media has either missed or didn't have the courage to say, because we all argue the media parrots news and doesn't add anything to it. So, hey, let's start with John. You were a peace officer for years. These are the type of events that peace officers don't like to respond to because of their nature. And could you give us your thoughts about how the police responded, how they acted, and your view of the entire incident?
Well, to be honest, Manny, I haven't followed it that closely. Of course, I haven't been able to avoid it either. But it seems like they performed very professionally, and I was surprised that he was taken into custody. I'm sure they'll debrief and figure out the things they did, positive and negative. A tragedy like that, what can you really say? All of us are deeply saddened by it.
Yes, I agree.
Good. Yeah, I mean, it really is sad. Sam, you must have some thoughts on it.
Yeah, a bunch of things. I'm amazed that when these happen all too frequently. I mean, since Columbine, all the way up to this one, there's been 20 or 30 mass shootings that we know about. More than one. Obviously, every night there's someone gunned down in America somewhere. And that's sad enough as it is. But I was amazed that but people use this, regardless of what it's a blog or Facebook or television or whatnot, to either beat the drum of their views, good or bad, for gun control, against gun control or whatnot. And really, they use it as a crutch to lean on, to get their views apart. And I think it was most disgusting is what happened on ABC News when they jumped the gun big time. I think it was Brian Ross and George, I would call him Step on Top of This, to say that this guy was part of the Tea Party. I mean, they really wanted that. And then the ABC had to issue a whistle that we said that. But, I just look at that. ABC once again takes another step down, less credible than it should be, and why people even listen to the mainstream media is beyond me, because all they do is just push their own selfish agendas and don't focus on the cause at hand, is that this guy's a lunatic. There are lunatics out there, and they're going to use whatever they can to hurt people. I always tell people, look, the terrorists who flew the planes in the 911 used planes as weapons. They didn't take the towers down with guns. So bad people will do whatever they can and use whatever they can to wreck their mayhem, and we have to remember that.
All right. I view myself marginally as member of the press, and I don't think it's just the press that opens mouth and inserts foot. I mean, there was a classic comment made by Aurora Police Chief Dan Oates. And he was talking about, having broken into the guy's apartment and, no lives were lost. In unbooby trapping it, but his quote was, "What we're seeing here is evidence of some calculation and deliberation." No shit, Sherlock. I mean, stupid. Okay, I obviously have to go for the gun control aspect. I can't resist. But the guy buys 4 guns, 6,000 rounds of ammo, some tear gas, and while I certainly do not want to trample on people's rights, I mean, there are some indicators here that there's a little bit of an issue. Okay, I'll shut up, and Peter, you must have some sensible things to say.
Well, I don't know how sensible they are. I know that an incident like this certainly gives rise to issues regarding gun control, and it should give rise to issues regarding gun control, but I don't see any real progress or any real change coming on that front, no matter what happens, because people feel very strongly about it. For me personally, I always find it interesting to try to ask the question, why did this happen? And because for me, I think that's where the real learning experience comes from. And I am interested in finding more out about this particular individual, because it seems to me to be an utterly bizarre chain of events for someone who supposedly has this level of education, who was raised in an environment that, by all accounts, was not abusive in any way, shape, or form. I agree with what John said earlier. I was surprised that he was taken into custody, because typically these guys have a kind of suicidal wish in one form or another, or they don't give up without being killed. I find it fascinating that he would set a giant booby trap for the police in his apartment, and then he would tell the police that it was there. Obviously, there was a great deal of planning that went into it, but I'm very interested in the psychological and medical components that create someone like this. And there is at least one documented account of a similar shooting spree that took place a decade or two ago, And the perpetrator actually left a note, and he said, when I'm dead, and he knew he was going to die, I want you to autopsy my brain. And what they found was, in effect, a giant tumor that was pressing on the aggressive portions of his brain. And I personally find those kinds of things very interesting. And I don't know what we'll ever discover about what created this person's conduct. But for me, that's an interesting area of discovery that I don't know if we'll ever really get to, but I always think about it.
And Manny, you're obviously chomping at the bit.
No, not really. I was very interested in Peter's analytical approach, which lawyers are always interested, much like psychiatrists and psychologists, and the behavioral aspects of these people. And my observation is this is just evidence of the decline of our society. And as you know, Simon, I'm in the middle of producing two Frank Capra films, one for television and one for film, and I've had the honor of reading an unpublished Frank Capra book that we're going to publish soon called Cry Wilderness. And I just want to read a couple of paragraphs out of this book because it's sort of a cross between the Scopes Monkey Trial, Inherit the Wind, and To Kill a Mockingbird. And basically he talks about this. He said, we're in the midst of a new kind of revolution, not over labor and capital, or over race, political systems, or even ideologies, but over values and personal attitudes, over fear for our civilization. For one thing, we don't believe anybody anymore. We don't believe our president. We don't believe our news media. And as you've just shown us, you don't believe your locally elected officials. And in fact, my county friends, we have reached that sterile state in which we believe very little or put much trust in any of our traditional institutions. This from Frank Capra in 1966. And he ended, and I'll skip to the next sentence and I'm done. Why? Because deep, deep down in all of us, we yearn to believe in something, something certain, secure, incorruptible. And we find that pearl of great price, the North Star that we can trust in its storm, that honest, trustworthy, incorruptible American to whom we can surrender our hearts and our souls, and to whom we can truthfully say, I believe in you, then, my brothers and sisters, we will cease to fear, cease to hate. Then we will believe in ourselves again and in our God and in each other and in the greening of our country. Well, this is an event that it goes right to what Frank Capra was talking about, a loss of trust in our society, institutions, the man sitting next to you in a theater, the good student who may be, you know, basically felt rejected by society and is retaliating if society doesn't trust. There are 100 different reasons and 100 different people who have been committing crimes, killing people. I mean, the whole north end of Chicago now is replete with daily murders of children, adults, everyone in the name of gang supremacy and wars. And to end this, I can only quote my wife and I who are watching this terrible story. My wife turned to me and said, you know, gosh, you know, maybe his student loans drove him to do this. And even though it's sardonic, there's a certain element of irony because almost every American has something to say about what may have caused him to do this kind of crime, because in each American right now, there's such a disgust for our civilization that people like this are coming out from under the rocks. So, Simon, save me from my rant.
Okay.
We need to go on and look at some other incidents, right, Simon?
Yes. You opened the door, you know, talking about whack jobs. But before we get to Michelle Bachmann, you know, who is the ultimate whack job, let's talk just for a moment about the goings on at Penn State. They tore down the Paterno statue today, and apparently the NCAA are going to be issuing punitive and serious, damages against Penn State tomorrow morning. Uh, I I just want to go once around the table and get people's take on the Penn State situation. Who would like to kick off? Who wants to grab the football? Peter?
Sure. I think that what the NCAA is doing is basically responding to public pressure. And I think they're about to get into an area that they themselves are unsure of how to proceed and what to do. And as we see in any kind of traumatic incident, there's often an extreme reaction to it. And I think they're going to level some very harsh and severe penalties against Penn State. And I don't know what's going to happen afterwards, but I think they're going to do it. I don't think it's really within their typical bylaws to be able to address something like this, but I don't think they're going to care about that. I think they're just going to gloss right over that. And I think it's going to have a devastating impact on the school's football program, but, you know, maybe that's appropriate. Maybe the entire university and the entire culture there really need to rethink some of their values and priorities, and maybe universities and programs everywhere can rethink some of their values and priorities, because what happened at Penn State, the potential for it exists everywhere where there's this kind of football-dominated culture.
John, I'm not sure that you're much of a sports fan.
Very much so.
Very much so.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on what's going to come down tomorrow?
Well, real quick, we discussed this last week. I was an admirer of Joe Paterno in the Penn State program. I thought he stood for something positive, not to negate his contributions. But I think the removal of the statue is appropriate. It's a reminder of the victims in my eyes, and that can't be glorified. And I'm glad to see that the NCAA is getting involved, because I don't want people to be distracted by that World Be Free report that came out that Penn State authored to try to do damage control, because they deserve some very punitive punishment over this. And I'm looking forward to see it, because like I mentioned last week, they've persecuted other programs who have committed far less crimes than this.
Sam, you're a sports fan. Your theories.
First of all, I want to thank Peter for sending me lots of information via the email. Peter, he really educated me on a lot of the stuff that was going on from that, and I thank you for it. I think the statue going down is karma at its worst or karma at its best, depending on what side of the fence you're on. The fact that taking down the statue means that I think they know that they're going to get the really get smacked over the head by the NCAA, and I'm shocked by it. I thought the NCAA would kick the can down the road and come up with an excuse and do anything, give a little slap on the wrist like they do Ohio State and other more favored schools that are big money makers. And it looks like, from what you know, Peter sent me, and I've been able to hear and see and read, is that they are really going to get they might get the death penalty for at least a year, and maybe more. I do want to say one thing. I noticed that everyone's lucky that this didn't happen where school was in session, or that school would be in riot gear right now.
Okay, Manny, you're a very big sports fan. I know you read my acerbic little email on the subject of the NCAA punishment. What's your theory? What is going to come down?
Well, I agree with some of the comments about the death penalty. Oddly enough, Peter, I disagree with you a little bit about jurisdiction and the rights of the NCAA. This is a situation that talks about what happened with SMU, institutional control, just letting the program running amok and then sheltering and then hiding its misdeeds from the public by merely, you know, what I would call shipping the problem off and hiding it. What I see happening is maybe something shorter than that. They'll probably take away scholarships they'll penalize people because everybody's been basically fired. Peter, what bothers me more is if you've read any of the news coverage, the Big Ten has now created a committee when the president's read and created a bylaw that allows them to actually enforce their own punishment and being able to remove the coach. And you know, I thought for a moment, wow, that's really kind of dangerous and strange. And then I thought, what if Joe Paterno were still alive and they hadn't fired him as a coach, and suddenly the presidents of other universities were going to make an effort to essentially fire the head football coach at Penn State because of this? I think it would cause a nightmare. So I think there are other areas where it's a big problem right now for them. So as we look at what's going on, this is a new frontier. And why? Because it's an entirely new violation and problem that nobody has ever seen before in sports. And I think you'll agree with me, Peter, that old axiom about hard facts make bad law. And out of this is going to create more bureaucracy, the type of things everyone says they want to avoid, and it's going to cause more changes. And the net results will probably won't be felt until the next time that someone has a problem, and we have to argue whether or not they're acting like a kangaroo court. So it's not always what we face here today, because the problems with Sandusky are somewhat black and white. It's going to be the problems that someone faces in the future and whether how this affects rights in the future. But it goes back to Capper's words. Basically, our society is falling apart. It is crumbling at the seams. Morality is being jettisoned. The same way Gordon Gekko's comment in the movie, Greed is Good, you know, from Wall Street, now is becoming Crime is Good. And for a great many minorities who can't make a living, it's just like going back to the 20s. It's the roaring 20s already. If I can't make a living normally, I might as well become a criminal because it pays well. And in this case, we have every sort of violation in the name of protecting images and, of course, corporate corruption. Because never forget, Penn State is a major corporation operating just like any other major corporation, but being protected by government laws. So let's move on to Michelle Bachmann, because now that I raise that, what we're talking about is the next step. In spite of what's all this going on, Michelle Bachmann, who represents less than a million people in her district, well, a section that's probably a third of the size of where I live in the San Fernando Valley, and a postage stamp on where Peter lives on the coastal side of Los Angeles at the beach, and yet she gets national attention for jumping up and attacking, you know, someone in the Clinton administration, and specifically, which got me a bit, is she attacked a human, I guess it's pronounced Abedin. And Human Abedin, it was married to Weiner, the politician who was sent too many emails, and is not even some foreign national Muslim. She was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan, went to George Washington University. Both her parents had PhDs from the University of Pennsylvania. And here we have another episode of McCarthyism, and I'm going to quote something from her and then ask the panel a question. In 2008, in October, around the time of the election, she raised all this, calling for a new McCarthyism. And when she called for a new McCarthyism, this was her quote: "I wish the American media would take a great look at the views of the people in Congress and find out, are they pro-America or anti-America? That's the same witch hunt I heard in my youth about McCarthy." So the question faced from the panel today is McCarthyism back? And is it a sign that racism in the name of patriotism is becoming the mantra of the Tea Party and other conservatives? Because, Sam, no matter what you say about the ABC's rush to judgment about the Tea Party, she's pandering to the Tea Party because that's where her bucks are, and that's where she intends to get her backing. And it really has a sense of the Tea Party is a racist party, because why would she make these kinds of racist statements unless that were the backbone? And John's laughing, so John, do tell me, is McCarthyism back, and is the Tea Party racist?
No, oh, you're killing me, Manny. Go ahead, Sam.
No, this is for you. You're the guy who backs all this stuff, so this is your moment to jump on me for it, if you like.
I'm unfamiliar with the story. Again, it's, I guess this is flavor of the week, like we said last week, but I'm just reminded of the axiom. Maybe it's for politicians. The only thing that's worse than being talked about is not being talked about, and you could use that in your profession too, Simon. So maybe she's trying to get attention. I don't know. But as far as McCarthyism, there's a couple books I'd like to recommend for people. Witness by Whitaker Chambers and Blacklisted by History by M. Stanton Evans. That'll give you an alternate viewpoint. And also, Manny, it's important to remember, Harvard-educated Ted Kaczynski was a Luddite, who you would probably have a lot in common with. And I don't think you're a exploding maniac.
I want to point out that there's nothing wrong with being a Luddite. I don't own
see what I mean, Simon?
iPhone. In fact, I don't own an anything.
He would agree with you on like global warming and those other issues.
Right. How about a sane word from Sam before John makes it worse? Sam.
Well, number one, I think McCarthyism never died; it went away. I think we call it different things nowadays. That's number one. So it's always there. It's always going to be there. It all depends, you know, what institution is throwing it out at it. It's there, and it always will be. And it comes from all sides, all angles and whatnot. I got, as far as Michelle Bachmann goes, I can't believe we're talking about her. This is the one everyone thought was going to be the president of the United States, give everybody a run for the money in the Republican Party because she came in first in some hot dog eating poll in Iowa last summer. And what happened to her? She got her ass kicked because her views are not that of the Tea Party. Tea Party is for individual liberties and small government. It's not, you know, are there racists in the Tea Party? Sure, they're racist everywhere. There's racist in both parties. There's a racist at a party I had last night here. So that's always going to be there. But she is definitely a lightning rod. She's an idiot. How she got elected in the first place is beyond me, especially from Minnesota, which is a pretty liberal, progressive state, always has been. But she did, and she managed to get herself elected. She has a niche. I think it's a fundraising niche to get some people around the country. And who made her relevant? Whoever stuck her on, John King made her relevant again. Go back to the media again, Manny. The media, I haven't read anything about her. It was all on CNN and some of the other stations because they have to rev up that machine because they can't stand the Tea Party won the midterm elections and has fueled the Republican base that may or may not topple the president in November.
Okay. We need a voice of sanity, which definitely has to be Peter. And then we're going to do something really scary and go to the phone lines. Peter.
I find myself agreeing with a lot of the things that I just heard Sam say. I don't think things like McCarthyism ever really truly die. I think they just change and they alter the way in which they present themselves. As for Michelle Bachmann, she's, you know, how did somebody elect an idiot? I think that happens all the time. I think that politicians, they cater to whatever political interest can get them elected, and then they seek to serve that constituency as best as possible. And I view her as doing nothing different than any politician would do when it feels that they have a constituency that's their, in effect, their bread and their butter. And, I worked on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. for 2 years for Congressman Claude Pepper. I was one of his legislative assistants, and I saw this repeatedly throughout all aspects of Congress, and there are those who would say, well, that's what Congress is supposed to be. It's supposed to be about politicians looking out for their constituents. And in regards to Minnesota being liberal, I was just thinking, wasn't Minnesota the state that elected that former pro wrestler and actor as their governor not too long ago, which goes to show you that at the end of the day, I think almost all close political elections come down to whoever is the most popular, and it's not a lot different than, you know, who got the ASB award in high school, in my opinion.
Right. Yes, indeed, Minnesota was the state that decided
that... Who was that politician?
You're talking about Jesse Ventura, by the way.
Jesse the Body Ventura.
Jesse the Body, his full name. Yeah, old Jesse. I thought we killed him off in the movie Predator, but he came back.
He blew out his chest in Predator, but that was not enough. He became governor.
I know.
Okay, folks, this is always scary. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have a caller from the infamous 111 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for our illustrious panel?
Okay, guys, I'm listening to this thing and I can't stand it anymore.
Hey, that's a familiar voice. Welcome.
Hey, guys, I'm listening to this, and one thing that I have to say about Michelle Bachmann, because it's got me going all week. She is an embarrassment to women. Okay, I can say you guys can't. Because I can honestly say, here is a woman who has an opportunity during this week of all times in our country, we have the percentage of women who actually are CEOs in the Fortune 500. 3% of the women are in management of going into Fortune 500. So you have Sheryl Sandberg, the fifth most powerful woman in the world right now with Facebook. May like her, may dislike her, doesn't matter. This is, should be celebrated this week. Instead, you have Michelle Bachmann, who granted there's, you know, 54% of women, I guess, are actually overall in management, but not in the higher, upper management. And here she is, instead of saying this wonderful thing, and isn't this a celebration, and look how far this country's come, we're going back, and we're going backwards to, like you guys were saying, McCarthyism. You know, does this mean that if I'm sitting on an airplane, and next to me is somebody who happens to be a Muslim, because I have no idea, and he goes to the bathroom, and I follow after and go to the bathroom, all of a sudden I'm part of the Brotherhood? I mean, it's as insane as trying to say that about Yuma Amadon. I mean, here's this poor woman who's already gone through the Wiener experience. She just got married in 2010, has had a horrific experience in 2011. I mean, give the girl a break.
That is punishment enough being married to Anthony Wiener. You are right.
I know. Give me a break. So now...
You are right.
So here's this poor woman now being... You know, just because she happens to have this religion, and who knows even if she has this religion? Who knows if she's practicing this religion?
Yeah, she is. She is a Muslim. She practices a religion.
But, you know, so for Michelle Bachmann to start going after every Muslim without any kind of... John, do you think that the president is a Muslim also? I mean, that's just ridiculous to me.
Like a lot of people, I'm trying to make a living. I don't have the luxury of thinking about stuff like that. I got to pay my mortgage, make money, to do what I can to get through the day. I don't have the luxury of thinking about whether or not people are Muslims or not. I put absolutely no thought or effort into it.
Thank you. So this woman needs to go get a life.
Right. I mean, John, does it matter what someone's religious beliefs are? Yeah, I'm a firm believer. No, it doesn't matter. I'm also a firm believer that it doesn't matter if you're white, red, green, you know, purple with pink dots. You know, as long as you're a decent person, you're a decent person. Mm. And why should this even be talked about?
I don't really know that it is, Simon. Who really makes it an issue? I know Manny knows my feelings. I'm pretty much libertarian, live and let live, and most people I know couldn't care less. Like Sam said, for some reason she's on the news. I guess it's to divert us from the crippling economy and everything else, the real estate market, and, you know, just divert people's attention from their lives? I don't know. Is it like the gladiators?
See, John, for me, you know what this is about? This is about starting to plant a seed. And that's why I threw the president thing at you, because right now she's still heavily into politics. And if she can plant a seed that, you know, the president, who people still stupidly say does not have an American, you know, was not born in America, is not American, and therefore he must be Muslim, and therefore everybody around them is Muslim, and that's his taking over our country. Now, she has planted that seed, and that seed is toxic.
Well, I don't know where it's taken root. I haven't heard it.
Oh, well, I sure have, and it's toxic.
And
it's,
I think people are a lot more concerned with trying to make a living than whether or not someone's a Muslim.
I do too, John, but the problem is that if you're going to take that political stance and you were going to throw that gauntlet down and say this is what's happening in the White House, because that's really what she's saying. In essence, that's what this woman is saying. And to me, it's very toxic, and it's no different than McCarthyism. And if you ignore it and say, I'm too busy with my life trying to survive my life, and anybody takes that seed in, I mean, that's politics. This is terrible, terrible thing she's doing.
And
I'm embarrassed.
John, I like talking to you.
Feelings mutual, Simon.
Right. And, you know, quite honestly, I don't care that you're a Hare Krishna. I mean.
See, another rumor starts.
He's a Hare Krishna from Russia, and he used to be a communist who hung out with the Muslims.
No, I mean, no. My point is, it shouldn't matter. It absolutely should not matter. You know, no one should care. Why do people care?
Well, Simon, the definition of a fanatic, and I'll stick with this, someone who won't change his mind and can't change the subject.
It doesn't get you.
I'm willing to move on.
Yeah. No, but John, your point's well taken about some of it but that's my point. And one of the reasons that I think this has raised so many hackles is she's very popular in the Beltway, and not just with her, but other people. You saw not only Boehner stand up with him, McCain also, because they like and respect her a great deal, which is somewhat of a compliment. Of course, it doesn't mean she couldn't be a spy in the older days, but the fact is that, you know, somewhere in here, you hit the wrong nerve, and this time she hit somebody who could defend herself, which is kind of unusual when these attacks come down. And I don't agree with you about, Sam, about the Tea Party. Yes, every group has a certain number of racist members, and racism, to me, is sub rosa. As a lawyer, I see it. Sub rosa means under the surface. I see it all the time in everything that I do and have since the day I started practicing law. People find different ways to discriminate against others, and it still goes on in our country. That's one of the problems, and that's why this came up, is she actually picked the wrong person to attack, because she actually had people to support her.
Do I think they're racist in the Tea Party? Yeah. I mean, what is the Tea Party? It's a faction of the Republican Party, and, it's, you know, I don't know why, and that's a whole other media thing. And by the way, I do agree with you, John. A lot of this is to distract us from the real problems at hand. The housing market, the student bubble, the student loan bubble, the Eurozone bubble. I mean,
luxury of worrying about what Michelle Bachmann says
or thinks? Yes, exactly. And who did that? CNN. And then you talk about ABC. Well, I talked about it. ABC trying to make this guy a Tea Partier. And if that was Fox News, and they would have called that guy, and the killer happened to be, the lunatic happened to be black, and they said he was part of the something else, their heads would be rolling. And the double standards are disgusting, and they're getting worse and worse and worse.
I totally agree, Sam.
But inside the belt, Michelle Bachmann's a legend in her own mind, and anybody inside the Beltway have made her something that she really isn't. That's why when she had to run for president, what happened to her, gang? She got queened.
To me, she's just trying to make money like Sarah Palin. And if Sarah Palin hadn't been selected kind of arbitrarily and without much thought by John McCain to be his vice president, presidential running mate, she would be as de minimis and worthless as as Bachman is, and that's one of the problems too. But we're going to get off that subject because we just gave it more than it probably deserves. I want to touch on, I sent an email to everybody about this, these lawsuits over what are called poll taxes, and the story about Vivette Applewhite, who's 93, who had her purse stolen and has been trying to get a new Social Security and birth certificate, everything. Because Pennsylvania passed a law that it required a photo identification to vote. And she, like many others, feels this is an act to discriminate against older black folk who may lose this information because those who were born before World War II and minorities have trouble getting birth certificates because many of their births weren't even recorded back then in white courthouses. They didn't care and they didn't want to hear about it. And so those of you who think that I'm reaching for this, is Texas passed a law that the Obama administration's litigating right now. It was struck down. And basically what happened in Texas is this law, the way it's set up and being enforced, is in being enforced strictly against black people and not against white people. So this returns to the pre-South era of my youth in the year 50s when I watched the South do everything humanly possible, from huge poll taxes down the line to keep minorities, particularly blacks, from voting in elections. Now,
well, also, I mean, can you imagine what they're going to do in Arizona? I mean, Sheriff Joe will be checking everyone's papers at the door.
Yeah, and by the way, Sam, in answer to one of your emails to me, a quick survey in Texas and some other states found that 8% of whites don't have that type of identification, but under the Texas election law, they don't have to provide any proof, but African Americans do, and that's why I consider this a poll tax. And throwing the fact that, as you know, fees have been jumped. In some cities, it's anywhere from $25 to $50 to get copies of any records because that's the way cities are raising more money in a tax-troubled time.
Manny,
so,
it's not a tax, it's a fee.
Oh, right. You don't consider...
It's like health care, it's a fee.
Oh, I see.
Say, John.
I thought Robert said it was a tax, John.
No, but Obama said it wasn't a tax.
Yeah, well, everybody's going to say something different about that one. Even after it's gone to rest, nobody will agree to what it is. And, in fact, I don't even know what it is. I still haven't figured out truly what this health care bill is. But
all right, let me give you a counterpoint to your argument. All right?
Well, I'm waiting.
All right. I find your compassion overwhelming for this lady who's the poster child for this. I want to say if people are really concerned with people not voting, get them an ID card. Think of all the things you can improve their quality of life, their standard of living. You can't even cash a check or travel, without, much less drive, without an ID card. Don't just take them to the poll booth because they're going to vote Democrat and that's the end of it. You'll never see them again. Give these people something in return, some kind of improvement of quality of life. Get them an ID card. Teach them some skills. Better yet, get them a job. If you don't have an ID card, voting should be about number 25 on your list of priorities.
John,
wait a minute. Tell me, what kind of job should a 93-year-old woman get?
I'm saying she's the poster child, but you know many these 25, 35-year-old guys are going to be voting 10 times under different names without IDs. That's the norm. You're singling out.
Oh, come on.
Take this 93-year-old guy.
Is that how Bush got in? All the problems with the voting?
No, those were the hanging chads.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But it's obviously the improprieties are where people don't have IDs, Ashley.
Right.
People in my area tend to be accounted for. But I think we should have a thumbprint. I don't have a problem with that. You got to have some way of guaranteeing a fair election.
But, John, you've got these elderly people who don't drive, have trouble just getting around the house. Their brain is in good condition. They can actually vote. They're voting Americans. They're Americans, but they don't have an ID. So what are they supposed to do? They can't use a computer. They have no access to the outside world.
Don't they vote absentee?
They can't vote absentee without proof now. That's the point.
Okay, so make
a special
dispensation.
They've been voting all these years, and all of a sudden they're saying you're no longer an American.
For these people, but don't just open it up to like make it the Major League Baseball All-Star game, because that's what it's become. Vote frequent, vote often. I mean,
well, I don't agree with you on that, John. First of all, you talk about the young. The young have no problem getting a driver's license. Most of them have their birth certificates. It's not an issue. This is an issue with the elderly who don't have the financial ability, and in some cases...
Manny, I just saw Jesse Jackson trying to sign people up the same day. They looked able-bodied young people, no ID.
Well, that's rare.
And all it is, it's the height of cynicism. He'll never see these people again. Let's actually try to improve their quality of life and get them an ID, for God's sake.
Well, you know,
well,
wait a minute.
Wouldn't it be better to get them groceries? You know, make sure that they have heat and electricity?
Simon, it's better to get them a job so they can buy their own groceries.
Well, Wait a minute. How are you going to get them a job in a society where big business is sending jobs overseas? There are no jobs for Americans because they've all been sent offshore in a political and completely greedy atmosphere of conduct by American corporations.
You know what, Manny? We can't control the actions of GE and GM, who are offshoring all these jobs, but as individuals, we can all make a difference. Maybe
okay.
That's what it takes, as individuals.
All right. I think it's probably time that we let Peter calm this whole deal down.
You're assuming that Peter wants to be part of this, man.
Well, I love being party to it, but I enjoy listening to people talk about this. As you've been talking and I've been listening, I also read the article that Manny circulated, and it seems to me that a number of states have passed some type of law that governs in some way a voter identification requirement at the time of voting. And all I can say is these things are all subject to constitutional challenge. And if it's a recent development, it will likely be tested on constitutional grounds. It looks like one state, Wisconsin, their Supreme Court already ruled that it violated the Constitution. And these things can be deemed violations of the Constitution if they're on their face, they don't appear to discriminate against any particular class of people, but they can be found to violate the Constitution if they are selectively enforced so as to discriminate against a class of people, or as a practical reality, they only discriminate against a class of people. But those constitutional challenges will take time to get worked out. There'll be test cases that need to be brought, et cetera. And until then, all we can do is let the state legislatures do what they do and let the courts resolve it. You know, that's just the democratic process. I don't know how any of this is going to shake out. But I also note that there's one woman here who says she can't get a photo identification because her Social Security card was stolen. And I thought to myself, I had a Social Security card once, and I have no idea where it is. Does anybody still keep their Social Security cards anymore?
I haven't seen mine in 30 years, probably.
I had to go get one. I remember it,
and it's gone. I don't know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's a bit chewed up, but I'm sure it's in the house somewhere.
That's impressive,
yeah.
I got to tell you.
Yeah, most Americans... certainly, white Americans have no clue where their Social Security card, and most of them don't even think about it until. But yet, for other people, it's an issue. And by the way, these are issues that are more deal with poverty level people, because, you know, in my case, and certainly John, where you live too, who would ask you? You know, who would have? And the same true with you, Peter. You're a lawyer. Who would dare ask you?
I show my ID every time, Annie.
For what?
To vote.
For what? To vote?
Yeah. My mouth's full with a Snickers bar, sorry.
You said what?
You know, it reminds me of a funny story, and it's only minorly related to all this, but sometimes in courthouses, You know, if you go to courthouses at all, you realize that you have to go through basically an airport-style security check, and you have to go through a metal detector, and you've got to take stuff out of your pockets. It's a lot like going to check in at an airline terminal. And at some courthouses, there's some special access for lawyers, but only if you have a state bar identification card. And that's kind of a joke, because a state bar identification card doesn't prove anything. It's literally just a card, and it has the name of someone on it, and it has a bar number on it, and it's signed in the back. And it doesn't prove that you are the person that the card says. It just proves that you have a state bar identification card. Nevertheless, one guy walked up to me, and I was wearing a suit, and I had these boxes full of documents, and I was clearly had all this legal stuff with me, and I said, I'm a lawyer, can I get in? And he said, do you have your state bar ID card? And I looked at him, I said, seriously? Just take a look at me. Isn't that enough of an ID in and of itself? And he said, go ahead.
Yeah. Ray Sips, the local reporter.
Yeah, it looks worse to actually look like an attorney than it does to actually have a bar ID card.
But okay, I'm going to pick up on John's idea. You know, why doesn't everyone just get an ID? That's a great plan. Why aren't IDs free?
Probably for cost reasons. I mean, there's a certain minimal bureaucracy associated with getting an ID card. You know, whenever I have to do it, I have to go down to the DMV. Those are state employees, and you got to stand in line. You got to walk over there. You got to have your picture taken. You know, there's a certain just overhead charge for providing that kind of service. And so if you're not going to have each person pay a portion of that charge, however nominal it might be, then the alternative is to basically have the bill foot by the state government, which is in effect everybody. And in these days of cost cutting, budgets are being slashed all the time. And, you know, one of the popular ways of slashing budgets is say, well, we're not going to pay for that. We'll make each person pay some nominal fee for that.
Yeah, but, John, I'm going to pick on you.
Please.
I mean, you know, 25 or 50 bucks to get a laminated plastic card sounds outrageous. Isn't there a cheaper way of doing it?
Not to my knowledge. I've never needed it, but even if you get an illegal one on the street, it's going to be at least 50. Like, you need a check cashed. But how about this? I would gladly waive the $10 charge or whatever it is, but how about as individuals, if you see someone doesn't have an ID card and you're able, take them down there and pay for it for them?
Okay,
how about we all get involved instead of, like, relying on the government to solve all the problems? All they're going to do is take a cut from whatever activity is, whatever commerce is undertaken.
Well,
how about, like, people actually help each other and go? I help a lot of people. That everyone who works for me, I make sure as much as I can, or just friends and family. But it seems like we've abdicated our responsibility, and everyone feels like, hey, just let the government do it for a nominal fee. Well, there's not any money left.
Well, John, let me ask you a question. I mean, here we have this this classic argument, and yet I listen to so many conservatives, and in many respects I would include you in that group, who constantly say we need less government, but yet the Republicans are the ones who pass these laws that require more government. In other words, more identification, you know, more people doing this and that.
You mean safeguard the sanctity of our elections, which is justified in my eyes. If you call that more government, making sure it's not like the Major League All-Star Game, I don't agree with you, Manny.
Well, seems to me that, that's less government and less important, for example, to go into our next subject, which is stopping the robber baron corporation. One of the unholy trinity of America is corporate production. Now, wait a minute.
Just before you go there, I have to ask Ashley. Ashley, you're a nurse. You clearly work with sick people because, you know, most, healthy people don't see nurses.
Well, we all work with sick people, just to figure out how to find.
Yeah, just a question of
I was just
degree.
Trying to figure out whether I should take that personally, but go ahead.
But, I mean, don't you think that, the idea of giving ID cards for free would be a good idea? You know, it would speed things up in a hospital environment.
I think you're right, Simon. I think it actually would. I think it actually would. The Social Security Office, if they're going to demand that the elderly have to have their ID through not just an ID card, but they have to have a Social Security card, because an ID card is like a library card, you know? So when John keeps saying ID card, should I assume that, because one should never assume, that means a Social Security card? And if they're going to demand Social Security, that everybody has to have their Social Security card, then the government's going to have to put out more money to go out and kind of like you're saying, Simon, almost like a food truck. You're going to have to go person to person to person to all these elderly homes and make sure that you're, you know, working with them to give them that card in order for them to be fairly treated as the American they are. So, I think it creates a whole different system, and that system is going to I really never thought about it, because I'm thinking of the elderly that I've been to in home health care and their inability to get out, and they're very much aware of who they're voting for and very passionate about this country. I mean, accumulation of that many years of life and that much passion for this country deserves, and many of them have served in the military. They deserve to have a Social Security number if they don't have one.
Right.
And you're right. It's going to take almost like a mobile library card type deal where they go home to home.
Yeah. But, you know, many elderly people physically do not have the ability to go somewhere. And they don't have the financial ability to, you know, fess up $50. That probably be it would probably mean that they'd starve for a month.
Well, it could represent an entire week of food for them. I mean, as horrible as that sounds, and if the adjustment is occurring right now where the Tea Party and everybody is saying, we're going to get rid of, you know, let's get rid of Social Security, let's get rid of Medicare. Oh, we don't need all this stuff, even though these people have all paid into that. And they have the rights based on they worked hard, they put into that, they have earned that. They, not only do they not get a Social Security number, but they're also going to lose all of their benefits that they have waited all their life for.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a whole thing. And then they can't vote. Wait a minute, you paid for it, you've earned it, you've earned the rights for it, but guess what? You don't get to vote.
Right. You don't have the Wazoo card, so...
The Wazoo card, I like that.
Right.
You know, my...
You can't vote today. You know, go away.
My experience has been with that, with fees like the fees associated with getting an ID card, that there's usually some provision for waiver of the fee if they sign some declaration stating that, you know, they their income falls below X wage or something like that. And I don't know what each state does, but I would be surprised if most, if not all states, didn't have some provision in there that said, well, if you attest that your total income is below X, then you don't have to pay the fee or you get a reduced fee. There's almost always some sort of provision like that somewhere.
Well, the
problem I'm sure that Texas is not one of those.
Well, maybe that's true.
Manny?
Jump in.
You don't
have
to worry about all those elderly people who can't vote for whatever reason roadblocks are being put up in their way, because in Mahoning County, there'll be thousands and thousands and thousands of dead people voting to take their places. Okay? We have a population of 200,000 people. You know what our voting rolls are? 450,000.
Yeah, because
that's why we're ground zero for Ohio for the election. It's amazing.
Sam, you got to repeat that. Say that again.
I'm serious. In 2008, they had over 400,000 people registered to vote. I call it the Mahoning County Board of Fixed Elections, okay? Other people call it the Mahoning County Board of Elections. Fought them for years, a lot of other activists trying to make it a clean, honest place, because let's face it, what you were talking about, Manny, is that woman and others have all elections have to be proper, honest, and whatnot, or what good is the system, right? I mean,
we can't have honest elections.
We don't. Here in this area, we have dead people. What happened? I even gave this to the FBI and another great organization sometimes. My daughter was living in North Carolina, okay? She voted absentee in the 2004 election, all right, at the time. She didn't vote. Someone voted for her. She was still on the voting rolls. And she voted, but she really didn't. She voted in North Carolina, where she was registered to vote. She had registered here when she was 18, and nothing ever changed. When she voted in North Carolina, they sent the information up here, and they never changed it. They never changed it. And the FBI has been alerted about it. What was the big answer? They stuck cameras in the 2008 election in the at the board. Who's watching those cameras? I don't know. But that's part of the problem is, yes, I agree with that. That woman, everyone should have the right to vote. I can't understand someone at age 93 can't come up with some sort of card or ID in all those years, doesn't have a spare one or whatnot. But I understand that. It could happen. Like Peter said, hey, I can't find my Social Security card. I understand that. But what really bothers me is I don't like this talk of this national ID. That scares the you-know-what out of me.
Me too.
We have enough of that stuff, and it'll just be in the hands of the wrong people. This is Big Brother all over. It's worse than Big Brother. And I don't want to give all that information out to that. But then, of course, Manny, right, people will challenge you at the polls, right? Do you have that in California?
No, we probably do, but I've never seen it happen. I think you can challenge people at any poll, but I don't believe that's ever an issue in California.
I've seen it here. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, let me explain why. California has, by far, the most complete data available for life. When you go in to vote, you have your address checked, you have your name cross-checked, and they have four or five different ways of cross-checking, and then you have to sign in, and, of course, you're subject to voter fraud. But we vote in neighborhoods where, believe me, most of my neighborhood, you would be recognized if you were. If you didn't belong there, someone would pretty well know you didn't belong there. And that's something that you don't see a heck of a lot of. I think in the Midwest, too much of this goes on because, again, nobody wants to spend the money to do it right. And that's the biggest issue, isn't it? Is you have to spend money.
Well, right, not just that. I think it goes back to what John said a while ago. When they talk about buddy Michelle Bachmann being an idiot. But no one's really taken time out to go investigate and say, let's clean up these voter rolls. Let's everywhere across America. And they don't want to focus on that. They don't want to focus on the housing problems or this or that. They focus on, now football camps are opening up, and now that the Olympics are coming, my God, you're not going to see anything going on for a while.
Well, yeah, crime will stop because most criminals are sports fans. What does that say about America, right?
I guarantee you, at my bar, I'll ask people, I'll go, name me all the draft picks of the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers, because our city actually knows it's halfway between Pittsburgh and Cleveland, so our town is half Steelers fans, half Browns fans.
Right.
They can tell you everything, how tall they are, where they went to school, what the mom fed them for breakfast. So who are your two United States senators, huh? So, that's the type of society we live in, and you know, it's pop culture, right? The Kardashians, the reality television shows. I mean, with all due respect, I hate to bring back the killings again, but I still can't believe I live in a world when it comes to Hollywood, Manny, and you know, you're big in Hollywood, that I never thought all these years ago when I used to read comic books that 30 years later, 40 years later, I'm 52, they would be the dominant force in Hollywood. When I read Batman 40 years ago, someone would have told me, hey, they're going to be making movies out of this, and they're going to make all sorts of records, blah, blah, blah. You won't be seeing any movies of real, you know, grit that came out. I would have laughed at them, but I was wrong.
Well, you have to understand that in my youth, in the late 40s, one of the hottest things around was the Batman serials, which I would get up on Saturday morning with my brothers and go to the local theater for the early showings, and they started usually from 9 till 12, and I watched that series, and it was a big part of my youth, and it was a big grossing project even then, Sam. And why? Because if there's one thing we learned in the Depression is that these types of films are what cause people to go to the box office and get away. Why? Because they want to escape. And that's why people do this, is they don't want to deal with reality. Look at the Fred Astaire movies and the Ginger Rogers from that period. Why were they so big? Because people wanted to go check out and not think about all of this stuff.
Okay, now I understand that, and my mom said the same thing, okay, and all that sort of stuff, and it was great, but the...
Don't tell me your mother was right for once.
Well, my mother was right all the time. She still is. Even when she's wrong, she's right. Okay, so but that stuff aside, but you go look at, but they were making serial films for kids.
Yeah.
Now it's done a 180. Hollywood is now making the big films because that's where the market is, and very little to once in a while you see a really good quality film sneak its way through and barely make it. I mean, come on, when you see an Abraham Lincoln vampire killer, and Hollywood's making a movie out of that, and thank God it tanked. That's Hollywood really needs to take a look at itself.
Yeah, that one still gets me. Every time I see an ad for it, I frankly shake my head. I don't even know how to respond to that.
But they turned that into something. But to take it one step further, is that why reality television show is so popular now, or going with what your philosophy?
I think Patty Chayefsky cornered that in the movie Network, if you recall, his conversation about appealing to the lowest common denominator and how people like to watch other people struggle. And that's part of what that movie, that whole thing's about, is it's sort of people like them, the common person, their struggles, their failures, because they can identify with that even though they may dream of the characters in Dynasty. It's the ones on the reality shows that they resemble most. Why did Queen for a Day and Price is Right and all those became such big hits in my youth? Because they appealed to everyday housewife who was sitting her own home bored every day. And why did I Love Lucy do so very well? Is because she spoke for the common man, and nobody understood it better than she did. And that's part of what our country is about, is where people used to embrace these issues, now they don't want to deal with them. And that's one of the other problems we have to face in our country. We need to get the population back into what makes America work and turn our country back into a productive country, which it's not right now. But you can't do that the way we're going. Go ahead, Seth.
Okay, I'll tell you what, fun though this conversation is, I'd like to switch it to GlaxoSmithKline.
Oh, yes, let's talk about where I was going, which is, you know, back to John and my long-running discussions been going on a couple of years about who's better to run America, corporations or the government? John's a libertarian who thinks we shouldn't support the government. We should have less government, let corporations do that. And you've heard him express his views that we should help our fellow man, which, by the way, was the view of the guy Brown that Bush appointed to head of FEMA, who thought that the Quakers should respond to emergencies like Katrina. So here we have a case where none of you want Obamacare. Half the nation doesn't want it. I'm not sure that I want it or don't want it, but I but it doesn't escape me that in this case, I'm going to use GlaxoSmithKline, a major drug manufacturer, as an example. Their employees and whistleblowers blew the whistle on criminal practices, which led to a $3 billion fine and pleading guilty to felony crimes. I want to repeat that. One of America's biggest drug manufacturers pleaded guilty to felony crimes and $3 billion in fines. I have listed, and Ashley, together with me, have listed numerous companies, so many I can't even address them in a 10-hour show that have been convicted of these types of crimes. And I just want to read a couple comments, okay? This is from, I watched an interview of one of the whistleblowers who, when removed from his job as a drug salesman for complaining about selling drugs to children, published a huge extensive report on all the criminal acts in GlaxoSmithKline, gave it to the board of directors and management, and what did they do? They hushed it on the carpet, Joe Paterno style, and fired them. So anyway, this is a quote from the whistleblower I saw watching TV. It's offensive. In my opinion, they have no regard whatsoever for precious human life. But if I've suffered nothing compared to a parent whose child has committed suicide on Paxil, imagine how horrifying that is. It's so repulsive. You're talking about a bad company run by bad people, in my opinion. And he talks about how drugs were marked black box, which is the ultimate warning, which Ashley can explain, being given to children under the age of 18, despite the fact the drug is specifically not for children under 18. This is what we call an off-label use, which is like taking a drug like Wellbutrin. It was indicated for depression. But they weren't making enough money, so they started selling it as a weight loss drug for pediatrics and for sexual dysfunction. So John wants to trust American corporations who act like this to run our economy, and the issue is, who do you trust? I'm not for big government, but I'm not for letting these kinds of criminals who harken back to the 1880s and the robber barons run loose in our society and be responsible for the death of our children. And so who wants to jump into this topic?
I'll briefly respond to that, Manny. First, let me ask you a question about Obamacare. Would this 93-year-old lady in Philadelphia, would they require an ID card from her?
I have no idea.
Only you know the answer, John.
No, I don't. I would imagine they do, but that would be racist. So I don't know.
I know, and that's your point, is you're back to the card as some type of step in the racism.
But let me say, yeah, of course, it's ironic, isn't it? Simon, you were with me on that. But let me say something for the robber barons, Manny. You talk about the 1880s. Think of all the innovation and technology and advancement we had during that period and the companies that are still around today. Ford, Olds, Schwinn, Harley-Davidson, Coca-Cola, U.S. Steel, which was Carnegie Steel, and, of course, my favorite sports periodical, the Sporting News, first published in 1886. Those companies are still around today, and think of how they improved the people's standard of living for over 100 years.
Okay, John, now you think about the number of people that these same Americans you talk about killed in World War One. What they caused in terms of the huge cost of our bad relationship with Russia, because they were at the heart of the ban on all Russia and sanctions on them after World War One, because they had the temerity to basically look at what the American companies had done in their country and expropriate their interests. So Ford, Edison, Bell, all of them went to the President of the United States and basically got them sanctioned in a way that started what eventually became the Cold War. So there's a lots of different viewpoints about that in history. So they're not as benign as all of you would like to say.
Didn't they improve the standard of living for millions of people, Manny? That's my point.
Is it an improvement in the standard of living? Are we living better than...
I mean, people back then were making 17 cents an hour.
But yes.
But a loaf of bread only cost half a penny.
Yes, but that's true. But the reason they were making that was because the antitrust laws came in 1880 and basically stopped them from doing that. Because before that, if you read, for instance, may I recommend Clarence Darrow's autobiography about how The railroad had lied to even him about the manner in which they were handling all the employees and built all these phony-looking places where they lived, which was the ultimate suburbia. But when you walked 10 feet behind their advertised grounds, there was squalor and how they basically treated that. Do you know who the Molly Maguires are? The Molly Maguires were a group of Irishmen who band together to defend other Irishmen, not unlike the Mafia, from the basic coal miners and other companies ranted. U.S. Steel was actually the worst. Carnegie and the rest of them, he was probably the worst of all the robber barons, and how they were just killing people in the mines every day.
Well, he was
like
a merchant at death, along with Alfred Nobel.
You're right. So now you're telling me they've done so much for
I've told
society.
You this before, Manny. I believe, and I would have supported Eugene Debs in the Pullman strike in 1893, I think it was, the railroad.
Right, and I'm sure you would have.
He was a man of principle, even though I disagree with him on everything. The man never sold out. He was an idealist, went to prison for his beliefs. And he never sold out and became one of the people he was protesting against, which usually happens. Like, you look at our unions today. They're as bad as the companies they're negotiating with.
Well, yes, but they're indicative of our society as a whole.
Well, maybe
and
we need people like Eugene Debs and Samuel Gompers, but that's 100 years ago. What are you going to do, Manny? We got to deal with it now.
See, those guys weren't co-opted by the almighty dollar.
Exactly.
That's the problem, Manny. It's not just big corporations. It's big corporations in an incestuous relationship with big government, throwing big labor, throwing the big media. And
yeah, they're all
fighting.
In it together, Sam. You're right.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. That's what we're fighting. And that's
right,
why, Manny, you're absolutely 100% right about the whole culture of America going down the toilet. Because the institutions that used to support it and support a better quality of life issues for everybody is now just cares about themselves. You go back to what you said, greed is good for all of them. And, I mean, and Ashley, I think, talked about this last week or whatnot. Look how much money we're spending to elect people to jobs that don't pay that much. Well, compared to what we mean, right? Obama's going to spend $1 billion. Romney will spend $1 billion. What is the office of the presidency pay? $400,000 a year?
Yeah.
I mean, so why would we? I mean, talk about a return on investment.
Sam, it takes a lot of money to lose an election now.
It sure does. At any level. So we spend
this
all
sounds
this
Michelle
money.
Bachman.
Yeah, we spend all this money, and it's really from. You know, some idiots give $20, $25, and, you know, I'm one of those people. But one of those idiots, I should say. But all these other ones give hundreds and hundreds, millions of dollars to influence the election. And as you asked last week, what are they getting for it? Well, we know what the drug companies got. They got Obamacare, or the insurance companies, excuse me. That's what they wanted.
Okay, I want to interject here. Poor Peter has been sat quietly.
Oh, I've been listening intently. I've been fascinated.
I was going to change the subject to, what kind of music you like. No, I'm joking.
Right. You know, it's these are intractable problems, and they can't. I don't think they're solved by one resolution or another. People say we don't want more government, but if you just look at the most recent example that we've been talking about, if it weren't for the government getting involved by pursuing criminal charges at Penn State, none of this would have come to the surface. And the unfortunate truth is that while big companies and big entities, Penn State is another example, they bring about tremendously great goods in the world. There's no doubt about it. Penn State has done wonderful things for many people. Big corporations have done wonderful, wonderful things for many, many people. But I believe that there always needs to be systems of checks and balances. And the larger the entity and the more powerful it is, and the more financially successful it is, the larger counterposing entities need to be to have any hope of monitoring it or keeping it reeled in. And other than just knowing, as I feel, that there has to be some checks and balances in the system, just like there are in nature, You know, no ecosystem is perfect unless there are is a balance amongst all the living things within it. And if you eliminate something from the ecosystem, one other part of it grows boundlessly and can't be contained. And it just it's a constant give and take. And there's truth to all of these points of view, and it's very difficult to imagine doing anything without having all these systems in place in one form or another.
And Peter, I mean that was a wonderful statement, and I'm going to say one thing, and then hold the phone far away from my ear, because I'm sure we're going to get blasted by Manny and Ashley. Let's talk about Monsanto.
Well, no, let's stay where we are on this subject, just for the sake of the world. You know, coming back to all this, this is one of the reasons that I raise this, because I want to offer this thought for America. And I say this endlessly. Our problem right now is not in electing a president. It is solving the problems we have in Congress. We need to take steps to protect our country from these type of people who, for example, you heard announced this week that after making all this big statement about how they were going to stop all this misdeeds in Congress on how they, I guess they essentially call it, were insider trading by members of Congress who gained confidential information while being in Congress, they exempted the House, controlled by Republicans, Sam, basically exempted insider trading as it dealt as it related to spouses and children. So here we have a situation where it did nothing to stop the insider trading. So Congress is again doing illegal insider trading, in my mind, among themselves, with privileged information not available to the general public, and they just enacted themselves. These are the people we have to do something about, and it's not the president. And I don't care, as I've said, whether Obama's president or Romney's president, unless someone does something about this, our country is not going to change. Zero. And any of you disagree with me at all on that?
Yeah, I disagree, Manny. I mentioned last week, Obama's now circumventing Congress. They're irrelevant with executive order.
Right, like Bush, who issued a record number of them in the history of our country, wasn't circumventing it also? How about his executive order to dismiss the lawsuit against Microsoft in exchange for getting $6 million paid for his presidential party? I mean, that's a classic example. So
Manny, that's in keeping with your courtroom strategy: attack the messenger, ignore the content, and hope the jury's attention is diverted from the original topic.
Right. So you're saying that the truth is not relevant.
I'm saying it's mutable, Manny. I've been in court.
Right. So, but
I just wanted you to ask the question, answer the question, that's all.
The answer is no, he hasn't done any more of that or any less of it than any president. How many
really?
Presidents? Clinton, for example, couldn't get an appointment through, if you recall, for a federal court judge because he was basically black. And
okay, so they're all wrong or they're all right or it doesn't matter?
I'm just saying it's all bad. We need to stop and do something about this, and that this is a bigger issue than who wins the election, because whoever wins the election is going to be basically impotent in the face of what goes on in Washington, because unless he plays that game, big business, because of Citizens United, is going to bribe their way through that the same way they've controlled the FDA and the statements. They even got the FDA to start eavesdropping on their own employees. Isn't that a horrible violation? And yes, government shouldn't do it, and I'm against that form of government. But it bothers me more that people like Monsanto, for example, are able to achieve those goals.
Well, Manny, for me, it's the fact that the FDA is actually spying on their own, you know, computer monitoring the scientists. That,
yeah,
to me, is bothersome, because that is one of the – and that's going on throughout the government right now, where they're having surveillance operations occurring, and people are intimidated – scientists are intimidated. They admit that they're intimidated. So you have things happening, like you're talking about the situation with Galaxo. This happened, my guess is because of the fact that here they are spying, and if they don't say the right thing, they're fired. They have no more grants. They have no more money. You know, and out of this, you have illegal things happening. I want to relate back to an article back in 2011, because what the Galaxo really hit me, this one was in the Washington Post, and it was how doctors were avoiding penalties in suits against medical firms. And in this, Eli Lilly had illegally marketed blockbuster antipsychotic Zyprexia for elderly patients. They had to pay out $1.4 billion in criminal penalties and settlements in four civil lawsuits. They harmed people. It goes on, $42.5 million to settle Alpha Pharma did for federal allegations against painkillers, where people are saying, I'm going to prescribe this and I'm going to make a profit, and oh well. In the meantime, they might have made $1 billion and they only have to pay out $4.25 million, so what the heck, so we give or take or kill a few people. Now, until we change things within the government where there's going to be safety, we're so busy with, you know, worrying about this insurance and worrying about, you know, all the other things. We have to go back and clean up what's going on, because the spying on scientists, because the U.S. government pays for that particular drug, so, wow, we can't lose money. And we're turning our backs on everything, and we're allowing these things to happen. This is very disturbing. We're talking about people's lives. And who knows, this event may turn out, the shooting that happened with the Batman, I mean, this may end up happening where we don't know what medication he was on. Does anybody know? Not yet.
Not yet.
Can I ask the panel a question?
Sure.
You've thrown out Manny and Ashley these fines of $3 billion and $1.4 billion. That's $4.4 billion with a B. Do you really think they're fined? And if they are fined, where does that money go?
Well, let me tell you, that's one of my biggest upsets. That money goes to the federal government.
Okay, what do they do with it?
The victims, and that's one of the most appalling things in the country. Why do you think the government is so eager? I'll give an example. Even over the banks and all the loan stuff, did you see the states race to see who could file a lawsuit first? And why are they racing? Because they want to get as big a share as they possibly can of whatever the settlement is. It's a
and
game.
The money doesn't go to the victims or the community as a whole. And I agree with you.
No.
And that's it is disgusting. They could take that $4 billion and go pay off people's mortgages. I mean, why not, right? That's what the better people who have mortgages underwater, forget the new government program, funnel the money to the people who really need it.
And Sam, I only mentioned the first two. If I went down a little bit further, it's $6.5 billion. Was given for another thing of kickback and frauds. And part of the fraud came out of Medicare. So here we are saying, you know, let's get rid... We have so much money being spent on those stupid old people with the Medicare. Let's get rid of it. I mean, basically that's what they're saying. Let's get rid of all this because we don't need it, we can't afford it. Yet, okay, we're spending, building hospitals again over... We're building hospitals in Afghanistan and everything else, and we're taking care of people over there. We are taking, and people are fraudulently occurring things are over here, and criminal charges, oh, well, we're charging them there. And you're right, Sam. What would happen if that money actually did go back into the government, paid back into Medicare, paid back into things that people need in this country, and stopped the terrible events that are occurring?
Well, let's go a step farther. We spent billions of dollars building 40 hospitals in Iraq, when they have a fortune in excess oil money every single month, and we're paying for it. Why didn't we build those 40 hospitals in the U.S. or devote that to the treatment and health of Americans? Even if there were just wounded veterans, I'd be happy with it. But I have no great love for Iraq. I'm sorry. I don't care what goes on in that country. I care about the Americans who aren't being fed. The same way Ashley got up, looked at the morning paper, and angrily read me a story about how some local residents in Studio City had a little party and for some cheetah and raised, what was it, Ashley, $10,000 for this poor cheetah who needed some home or something. But yet we have people homeless in Los Angeles on the streets who need meals. And yet
$10,000 for them would feed them. That's a lot of money. When you start putting that together, it's like one little party, that's what they raised for this cheetah. Now, I think it's great that they're rescuing cheetahs. I think it's a good thing. I am pro-animal. But by the same token, human beings are also important. So, I mean, this is where our money
okay.
should be spent.
All right. I do have a question about the GlaxoSmithKline deal. That they've been fined $3 billion.
Spit in the bucket.
Nothing. That would, well, I'll tell you what, it would wipe out my bank account by about $2.9999 billion. And it's a felony crime. I always thought that felonies were like kind of serious. People went to jail. People went to prison. But apparently that's not so.
Well, Simon, I can tell you there's never been a client who sat before me that didn't make some kind of statement about the two levels of justice, one for the rich and one for the poor. And in the case of corporations, it's the ones with the most political clout, and that's what we have here. We have a situation where those with the most political clout, with the corporations and other people across our country, are less prone to be sentenced to a crime or do something silly like, house arrest in your own home, a 10,000-square-foot mansion, so you can watch television for 4 months, but you can't go out. Oh, my God, they all scream bloody murder. I can't leave my place. Oh, my God. But, you know, that sure beats sitting out in a tent at Joe Arpaio's prisons in Phoenix. So you tell me, is there justice for two different levels? Peter, how do you feel about that?
Well, I was reading some of the stuff on the GlaxoSmithKline criminal guilty plea and their restitution payment or settlement or whatever you want to call it. As a general rule, what you say is true. With respect to the GlaxoSmithKline matter, is it was the U.S. government that was pursuing charges against a British-based pharmaceutical for, encouraging doctors to basically give medicines to people under inappropriate circumstances. That's a broad way of defining it. And according to what I could read, a lot of the people who were in charge of this policy at the time supposedly are no longer with the company, or they've passed away, and this is being discovered years later. I couldn't quite gather those details.
No, that's not so, Peter. Let me correct you. This was discovered by the employees in 2001, notified the board immediately when they were removed from their positions, who swept it under it, which then brought them to filing a lawsuit and became a whistleblower. And when you talk about British companies in the drug business, they're the same. And basically what happens is stuff are just basically sent to overseas places where they can have different rules. Like, most people don't realize that most of the drugs they take are made in India. And most Americans would be really upset if they really understood the course these drugs took to reach their homes and their lives. And every time I hear someone in the drug companies go, oh, you can't buy overseas drugs, they're not safe. And I always say to myself, then, why are you selling them? Because they're the prime salesperson of overseas drugs. And Peter, we chronicle this at some length in our books. And why does it rail us so much? Well, because I almost died. I had a heart attack from Vioxx. And the whistleblower, who incidentally was an employee of the FDA, was threatened if he testified for the FDA, in front of the FDA, and Congress had to threaten the FDA that if he were fired because of the pressure of the drug manufacturers, they would remove everybody from the FDA and sanction them. And he's still there, and they've done everything they can to get him out because he's the only one there who will tell the truth about what the drug companies go. So any time in our country where you say anything in opposition to a drug company, you're headed for the worst kind of sanctions in the world from them, because they will do everything short of killing you. And if your name's Karen Silkwood, then that can happen to you also.
Now, I'm sorry, you're talking about the director of the FDA?
Yeah, I'm saying they threatened to remove the director of the FDA and other sanctions against the FDA if he were terminated as a result of his testimony before Congress.
Yeah.
And basically, he exposed them for selling, for the fact that there was no real test of Vioxx. It was a fraudulent test, which they were absolutely... There was no proof that patients were falsified. All the different records were falsified. And basically, Americans were basically taking an untested drug. And I might point out that Celebrex was coattailed under that same Vigor test, it's called, and is still selling despite not having any tests that support its supposed proprietary use.
It's never been tested.
Right.
It's never been tested. So here you have a drug that is widely used, widely advertised, out there like crazy, and guess what? It's never been tested. Now, at the same time, Manny had a heart attack. My father was on Bextra back in Ohio, and he went into renal failure and died shortly after. But because he was old, oh, well, we'll just dismiss it.
And worse, let's go a step further. They then intimidate doctors who are scared to death of the drug companies from putting on the death certificate the cause of the death is a drug, because they're afraid the drug companies will come after them. So they put down natural cause or anything to avoid being lumped into what could be a litigation scenario. Because the minute they write that, then they have to worry about some lawyer picking it up and using it as a basis to sue, and then they become a witness in a lawsuit that they don't want to be involved in. So it creates this kind of unnatural trickle-down of problems. But I want to come back to the subject of all this. The point is, while you're talking about good Obama, bad Obama health care, isn't the issue to me. The problem is we have American corporations that lie, steal, and cheat from Americans, bribe our politicians, bribe the people in the FDA, because there's a well-known FDA former head who approved... which one actually got approved? And he was basically given a job with a drug company for, I believe it was $20,000 a month, and he never showed up in the 90s. He was appointed by Reagan for the sole purpose of passing, I can't think of the number.
I can't remember.
It has more complaints about it than any other drug in the history of the FDA, and yet the manufacturer is powerful enough to keep it on the market. And this is the problem we face. If we we're not going to have a country.
It's because of two reasons in my book. First of all, it gets back to, again, when you go to any of the FDA sites or you go to the sites itself, you will find that the government is supporting and financing the experiments on creating this drug. So there you have your partner is right now that you're going to approve. Is your partner, and you spill millions of dollars to try to get this thing passed. Now, they're now in their, you can't lose some tax dollar money. So FDA then is pushed to pass it. And what's ironic, and Manny and I point out several times in our books how many people we name names where they will be at the FDA and the drug gets approved or the device gets approved, and it's really something that should never have been approved. Next thing you know, this person is no longer at the FDA. They are working in a top position, making a lot of money for that particular drug company. So there's incest within my entire system that needs to be changed in order for people to be taken care of.
Oh, the problem that I see goes far beyond the FDA. It includes the FCC and just about all of the rest of the idiots.
They're smart. They're not idiots. These guys are really smart. The problem is that they lack a heart. So the lack of heart means you are not protected.
Right.
There's two different people.
Okay. We are almost completely out of time. So I do want to go around the table once and get everyone's parting thoughts. I'm going to start with the sensible one. Peter.
I think it would be good to get me out of the way as soon as possible. Nothing. I can't add anything except to say that I am just continually fascinated by all these discussions, and I'm grateful to everyone for their thoughts, because it sends my mind spinning, and I learn something new every time I'm a part of this. So I thank you all very much.
Peter, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Sam, you've probably been stewing gently in Ohio.
Well, I think what I've decided, that I'm going to take all of you and we're going to start a giant kibbutz for the world. Because I think that's what we could do, a giant, and we'll be in charge of it. We'll be one big kibbutz, and I think everyone will get along. There'll be none of this. We'll get rid of all the world's evils that way. But thanks again for having me on. It, like Peter said, I learn something all the time. It's sometimes it's just great to shut my mouth, which is very hard for me to do, by the way, everybody. And and listen. And by listening, I learn, and that's a good thing. So thanks again.
My pleasure, Sam. And I'm going to have to face the infamous John Perry.
Thanks, Simon. A couple things. My hearts and prayers go out to the victims in Aurora and their families. And I want to say a lot of people are going to try to take advantage of this situation. You're going to hear a deafening roar to restrict the Second Amendment rights of lawful gun owners. Look at the facts before any legislation is enacted. The highest cities with the highest crime rates, they're going to have the most restrictive gun laws. And also think about this. A firearm is a great equalizer for women and the elderly. And there's nothing more that a crook fears than an armed citizenry. And Simon, I'd like to pay you a quick compliment. You have an uncanny ability that I really admire, that you know the precise moment when to say nothing.
John, you do owe me lunch.
I do, Simon. I'm looking forward to meeting you, because like Groucho Marx said, I never forget a face, but in your case, I'll make an exception.
Ashley, bring us back down to earth.
I'm not here today. I just called in. So I guess I've already spoken. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Simon. And thank you for picking up my call. The Bachman pushed my buttons. And it was a good show. I really appreciate it. And thank you for all the information. Very much appreciate it. It's food for thought.
You are always welcome on the program. And last but certainly by no means least, the infamous Manny Barling.
Ah, Simon. You know, first of all, I'd like to repeat something Sam says once in a while about getting together with widely divergent viewpoints and being able to exchange opinions as Americans without rancor. And I enjoy this panel so much because we're able to ferret out for all of our listeners so many different opinions and directions that these stories go. And John, who does, and I'd like to really pay tribute a bit to John, who will shift arguments for the benefit of making an argument, who reminds us of so many different views and different ways to look at things in America that other people don't really bring up very often. And what we're trying to do for our listeners is offer you the greatest number of views, the greatest number of things to listen to that will help you form whatever opinions you need to form to vote. And we ask that you do it with an open mind. I'd agree with this, but then have an open mind towards all the different choices you have. Look at them deeply, carefully. Study the various changes in law. Determine whether or not Congress is really as corrupt right now in terms of being bribed as we discussed. Just don't rely on us. Go out there and get some of the answers yourself. Come to all these conclusions before you vote. And above all, be ready to vote, because there's one thing this panel shares in common. We all love America, we're all willing to die for it, and we're all standing up every weekend to bring these topics to you because we believe in this country and what this country stands for, and we know that every one of our listeners do also. And for that, thank you for listening.
Manny, I couldn't have said it better. So I'm merely going to say my name is Simon Barrett, and I wish everyone a happy, safe, and healthy week. We'll be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.